Good morning. First case you'll hear is United States v. Larry Jordan. Mr. Anderson.
May it please the Court, I'm Kent Anderson with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois, representing the appellant Larry Jordan. Mr. Jordan pled guilty to conspiracy to distribute and possess with intent to distribute crack cocaine and was sentenced to 262 months. I raised a couple issues regarding the length of his sentence simply to preserve them for Supreme Court review. However, Mr. Jordan was also ordered to participate in substance abuse treatment as a condition of his supervised release, even though there was no evidence that he ever used drugs or alcohol. Because of this lack of evidence, there's no reasonable relationship to rehabilitating Mr. Jordan or protecting the public, and as a result, it's a greater deprivation of liberty than is necessary to achieve the purposes of sentencing.
How old is your client?
No, I'm trying to remember. I believe he was born in 68, so that would make him 38, if I remember correctly.
How old will he be when he is released?
Well, he'll probably do about 20 years on the sentence, so late 50s.
Okay.
the government says that Mr. Jordan's statement that he didn't use drugs or alcohol is self-serving. But the opposite is actually true, because at that time, Mr. Jordan still had a chance of winning his objection to the gun enhancement, and if he'd done that and been found to be an addict, he would have been eligible for drug treatment in the Bureau of Prisons and up to a year off of his sentence. So that would have been more in his interest. The government also says that Mr. Jordan's record shows that he used drugs. However, both of Mr. Jordan's prior convictions were for selling drugs, not using them. They also point to his arrests for possession of a controlled substance, but there's nothing else on the record other than the fact of the arrest, so there's no findings as to what actually happened, if anything. We don't know if Mr. Jordan actually did anything or if he did what he did. At most, the prior arrests suggest that possibly a professional evaluation might be appropriate, and then the treatment condition could be made contingent on the recommendation of a professional who treats and diagnoses substance abuse problems. Now, in Mays, this court did hold that a no alcohol condition wasn't plain error, but that case contained at least some evidence of a past drinking problem. This case doesn't contain any evidence. Therefore, imposing the special conditions of supervised release without any exception or apparent basis seriously affects the fairness, integrity, public reputation of judicial proceedings because it appears to be arbitrary.
In 20 years from now or whatever, supervised release, what is he going to have to go through that he wouldn't otherwise have to go through? What kind of test or testing or avoidance or what?
Well, obviously he'll have the standard testing conditions, but
anyway, right?
The judge also ordered him to go through some sort of treatment under the supervision of the probation officer. It's not clear whether that would have to be inpatient. Maybe it could be outpatient. Probably it may be up to the probation officer. And frankly, I don't know about 20 years from now, but right now there isn't enough space for all the people that need it in either form of treatment. And so to have somebody else jump through the hoops that doesn't apparently need it just doesn't make any sense. Now, if he did need it, obviously it'd be a good thing.
The pre-sentence writer recommended this, apparently?
Not that I recall. It seems like just because it was a drug case, the judge just did it. And frankly, in most drug cases, it's a good idea because more often than not, there is a drug problem involved. This is one of the rare cases where it appears that he was selling without using.
He got into it for making a profit, not because he had to pay for an addiction, I guess.
Apparently.
he might also learn in those treatments how it affects other people, and selling them, what an impact it has on them, too. Sometimes you can realize that you hurt a lot of people in this business, even though you don't use it yourself.
Possibly. Of course, hopefully the time in prison, if it doesn't convince him of that, it will convince him how much he's hurt himself.
That's why Sykes asks, how long is this going to be when he finally gets around to supervised release?
A long time.
Probably be a relief.
I'm sure it would be. And frankly, obviously, Mr. Jordan would rather win the issues relating to the length of his sentence. Unfortunately, this court has already decided those issues adversely. Well, in one case, the Supreme Court has. But as a result, therefore, this court should vacate the substance abuse treatment of Mr. Jordan's supervised release. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Leggins.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Tom Leggins, and I represent the United States in this appeal. I was not the attorney of record below, but I am familiar with the record. And as I understand it, counsel is only raising one issue, and that's the drug and alcohol testing issue. And my initial reaction to that is really who does care? I mean, it's going to be 20, 25 years before this thing ever comes to fruition.
Why didn't you confess error then?
Well, I didn't confess error because there was no error. I have to come here and support what the district court did, and especially
if you think there was error, you should confess error.
I don't think there was error. That's
well, the district judge didn't give any explanation whatsoever for this discretionary decision, did he?
He did not give a reason, but there is adequate reason within the pre-sentence investigation for this court to affirm the decision, especially in light of the plain error standard, which the defendant confesses in his brief. If you look at the PSI in this case, this was not the first conviction for a drug-related offense that this defendant had. In fact, this was his third drug-related offense for distribution. If you look at the pre-sentence report, you're also going to see that this defendant also had several prior arrests for possession of controlled substances. Now, the factors which the court has to take into account in imposing sentence and imposing conditions of supervised release is protection of the community and rehabilitation of the defendant. And while I agree that 20 years from now, this defendant probably isn't going to have the ability to be much of a danger to the community, his rehabilitation is something that is important, and in that regard, I guess maybe we shouldn't take it so lightly. If this defendant has had a long-term involvement in drugs, as the PSI indicates he has, then this was certainly not an abuse of discretion.
As a seller, not a user, is there any evidence whatsoever that he was a user?
Yes, he has prior arrests for possession of controlled substances.
Do we know the circumstances of those?
They're set forth in the pre-sentence report.
I haven't read the pre-sentence report yet, so why don't you tell me?
They were your mundane possession offenses. He possessed not big quantities of controlled substances, in my recollection. And I think that is, I mean, all of this involvement with drugs is sufficient to...
Well,
to,
you would concede get, that there are some drug sellers that are not also drug users.
I would concede that there are. I have seen that, not very often. Usually if you're involved in the drug culture, you're also using, especially the cocaine and crack cocaine. I have seen big-time drug dealers who didn't get involved so much in the using, but in this, and even that, I think, is something that the court could take into account, that in this type of offense, that the dealers also tend to be users.
Is this condition routinely imposed without any statement of reasons by
Yes.
the district courts in drug cases?
Yes, that's fair to say.
And is that appropriate?
It would probably be better if they would provide a basis for their reason, but when there is a basis for it, otherwise...
Well, it's a discretionary decision.
Correct.
Right? And when we're reviewing a discretionary decision, it's not standardless. There is a legal standard that applies to the question,
right.
Correct?
That is correct.
And so we need to look for some actual exercise of discretion rather than just a routine rote imposition of a condition without any evidentiary or other basis.
And
it seems to me there was a sort of a mild treatment of that in the Mays case. I think that's the right case. Maybe I'm not. Yeah, that's the name of the case, Mayes, where this court, in, I thought, sort of gentle way, suggested that this condition was being imposed too routinely without a lot of consideration of whether it's appropriate. Didn't reverse on that ground.
Right.
You know which case I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. I think it's cited in both of our briefs. The and I think still you got to go back to is, does the record support, even under an abuse of discretion standard, I think, the you look at the record to see if there's anything in the record which would support the condition. And I agree with Your Honor that it would be better if courts would explain in detail, in minute detail even. It would be easier, certainly, for this court to figure out what happened.
But it wouldn't require much explanation if the pre-sentence report said he was addicted to whatever drug it might be or abused alcohol. Whatever.
Right, or the court could say, based on, you know, the fact of what's contained in the pre-sentence report, I'm imposing these conditions, and I will admit that even that didn't happen in this case, but it still doesn't undermine the fact that this condition in this case is not inappropriate. It's not an abuse of discretion for the court to have imposed it once you look at the fact of this defendant's prior involvement and his prior drug history.
Short of an appeal like this raising the issue, is there any way to remove this condition?
Yes. Yes, there is. When this defendant gets out of jail, he can challenge the imposition of this condition, I believe.
If the supervising agent puts the defendant through an assessment and determines that he doesn't need this, can the agent himself or herself remove the condition, or does it have to go back to court?
I think it would have to go back to the court, or that's the way I've seen it happen. I've actually seen defendants get out of jail and challenge a restriction they had on them, and the way it works is usually the probation officer will agree with them, and then the probation officer will bring it to the attention of the court. Whether that's required or not, I don't know.
What is the routine for supervised release? I assume they're just set procedures anyway about an assessment when they get out of prison and
yes.
Their present condition. And suppose there is not a requirement for drug testing, say. Is that a determination that could be made by the at supervised release, whoever makes that decision?
That someone gets out of jail and the probation officer decides that they need that as a condition?
Uh-huh.
I've never seen that happen.
So they can't impose something unilaterally or remove it, I guess.
I have seen it removed. I have never seen a probation officer come back and ask for an additional...
In other words, there's not an automatic drug testing requirement when you get out of prison.
If the court orders it like it did.
Not a court order. Something that's routine when you go on supervised release. There's just a set of rules under supervised release.
No, there's not. Unless
so everything has to be predetermined, and in this case, 20 years hence.
That's my experience, yes.
Okay.
And if there's nothing further, I thank you.
Okay. Mr. Anderson.
Just to answer a couple of the court's questions, I was right. Mr. Jordan was born in 1968, so he just turned 38 in August. And there's no recommendation of any supervised release conditions in the pre-sentence report. Obviously, I don't know what may have been in the confidential recommendation to the judge. And regarding Mr. Jordan's prior arrests, he has three arrests for possession of a controlled substance. Two were in 1989. All it says in the pre-sentence report is they were nulli prosequi, and one in 1991, which just says no probable cause. That's all the information that there is in the pre-sentence report. The question, which probably didn't answer quite as well as I should have, I agree that education regarding consequences is definitely a good thing, but treatment's usually meant to get somebody off drugs or help them stay off who has a problem. Some other program was created to educate those who don't. That might be great, but I don't know of any right now, and that's not what we're talking about. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, thanks. This case we take under advisement.